Aloha and good morning to you all out there. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show on Talk808.com. This is our new location, our new home, as we've been working toward structuring it and setting it up and making all the connections and the wirings and what have you. And what we are doing, actually, we can entertain up to approximately 10 DJs for... You can have your own show on this station. We've set it up that way, and for a small fee to cover the cost of the technical support that we have here. But other than that, it's a good deal, quality sound. We don't have to get permission to go on air and come off air and pay big bucks. So it's a great thing, and I invite all of you out there. So if you want to look at it, Talk808.com is the website that I refer you to. That will be the banner website. And then CarolCox.com is the actual show. But so if you were President Barack Obama, and you want to host a show on here, you could host it, the Barack Obama Show, right here on Talk808.com. How do we do it? I don't know. That's why you... You have smart people around you. They don't. I don't ask them. I just tell them what I need, and they say, "Okay, we'll see what guy like you need." We got we're up and running, and pretty impressed with it. We're going to actually be hosting a show on try and do drive time in the afternoon. So tell all your friends and your enemies and anybody that's stuck in traffic and want to talk about. Want to hear things, you know, it makes drive a little bit better. And so we're going to make ourselves available for that Monday, possibly Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And what would be good if we had someone that was interested in talking about it. There's a lot of things that went on this weekend, and namely politics. And you know, this is a Democratic state. I see that Colleen Hanabusa lost the race, or basically spared herself of being accused of failing to fix what haven't been fixed in years, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, 80 years. And so it's maybe it's a good thing she lost for her, because... you know, I don't know if David Ige is going to part the office with white hair, but, you know, like they say in the White House, you come in with black hair and you leave with white hair, hair full of, you know, snowflakes on top of your head there. Because people are difficult to work for and please, and when you're trying to please everybody who don't know what it is that they want, it can be difficult. Make you scratch your head until it bleeds, or you come in black hair and walk out snowflakes. But there's a many of things happening here. You know, we're always on the cat situation. We're going to talk about that a bit, and we're going to be a little scattergory here. Talk about that and talk about some of the contaminants. I wanted to continue to, as repetitive as it may appear, I'm wanting to share with you listeners out there the concerns for contamination and chemicals in the environment and how we do things. And, you know, the Burns Medical Center, for example, down there at Kaka'ako, if I were to read you some of the things there, and I will be doing that, we'll talk about them. But you can imagine, or no, you can't imagine, because we don't know the real history of that site. But pesticides and DDTs and you name it, lead and barium, and just in large quantities of levels, exceeding Hawaii's safe level regs. So we got a children's site down there, the Explorer site or whatever it is. It's a former, and many of you may not know this. But the Children Education Center, we'll call it, It actually is in Kakaako, and what it is a former incinerator site where they burn trash. And, you know, burning trash could lead to many things. And remember, we had DDT in those days, and we had other things, chlordane, arsenic, and all. And all of these chemicals may have been burned there indirectly or directly, either intentionally or unintentionally, and also stemming from a lot of dumping. So I'm going to try to piece it all together, but, you know, I'm sound as though I'm all over the place. But just want to have a general conversation about this and that and you know what. But when we get up fully running, I'll be more structured, I think, and we'll have a lot to say. But I want to start off with the situation. You know how it works here in Hawaii, or maybe you don't know. When folks run for office, so let's say the people that ran for U.S. Senate, a Democrat, Mazie Hirono, Reyes, Pacheco, Haverty, right, and Matrins, I'm sorry. So you're going to get these people, they run for office, and so let's say the Green Party, I'm trying to find what I made a note here. So Kanuhu, Ford, Brenda Ford, and Democrats, Kahele, he won his. But if you don't win, you're likely to end up with no job. But don't worry. There's a practice here that you run today, and if you ran for Senate, if you were a senator and you gave up your seat, you run for office like Jill Takuda if she were to lose. And so if you lose, what do? You're out of a job. Now, a number of them have second jobs, by the way, to include, for example, my state representative here and others. They have second jobs, and in fact, you don't get them to full. It's part-time anyway. So they're not there the full year, but even during the full year, the term that they're serving, when they're open for business, you don't really have them at your disposal. They are off gallivanting across the country and around the world on trips to go look in a hole to see how trash is buried or dumped or how geothermal activities happen. You know, the kind of waste taxpayers' money kind of thing, right? Because many things don't happen. And if we get a chance, we're going to talk about the forfeiture when your property is seized from you. The state auditor did an actual audit and wasn't very impressive as far as the attorney general's office, and there's some deficiencies that they identified. So, you know, if they seize something from you, the bar is so low, as the audit says, that there's programs that they're supposed to recover money from the sale and deposit money and keep at a certain standards, but it didn't happen. There's some deficits there and some improper handling, and we'll read some of that. But so take, for example, when Norman there's a senator, he lost about 3, 4, 5 years ago. And, well, what happened? He lost his job and as a senator. So he then just doubled back and go and work for Hawaiian Homeland. He gets appointed or gets a job in that. So now you'll see, it's unlike us when we lose our job. we go to the unemployment line or go beat the bush to find some other job. But the way it stands here, if you run for office and you're a member of the Democratic Party, and then Republicans will do it too. I mean, it's, you know, it's welfare that they claim they all hate, and they don't want to encourage people taking something for nothing. But in reality, this political season is just the high point of welfare. You know, many of the guys in office, they can't really render decisions, can't come to a conclusion on many of laws and bills and what have you, or agree on anything. So what's going to happen now is with this loss of positions and what have you, some of them are assured a job because you got to take care of your teammates. You just can't leave your teammates behind, you know. No politician left behind is their motto, and especially no Democrat. So what's going to happen is that these people that lost their positions, and they will probably end up out there with a new job, probably and likely deputy director or special consultant or something, and get a part-time or a 90-day contract. There's all kinds of ways to allow politicians to gravitate back into the system, even though they took the chances. An honorable thing, they say, that they did, they want to help the people manage their business and what have you, and make sure and save money and get solid laws and legislation and fairness in legislation and all of that. But they also want a job. And some of them may be consultants, or a few of them may find them to go out and file lobbying, register as lobbyists. So that's what we have to look forward. So when you possibly have a chance to go to one of the state offices or city office, depend, you're going to see some of these politicians that were once legislators or what have you, and now they're not. They're employees of a certain agency, a state agency, or city agency. So don't be shocked, and just give you a little background so that when you say, oh, Ms. McArdle Kim, what are you doing here, you know? Or Ernie Martin, what are you doing here, you know? So when you give up those positions, unless you filthy rich, and, you know, the way it is. So some of the things prior to the elections, a lot of people, and especially in the cat feeding community, the ones that take care of the cats and try to manage the population and what have you, they had some concerns, and there was an email floating around, and the title of it was U.S. Hawaii, Urgent Action Alert. Governor Ige, and I'm quoting this now, this is a caption on the email. Governor Ige prepares for mass cat slaughter after election. And the email goes on to say, it's just the old, quote, cats are predators, end quote, rulemaking from a year ago that he's waiting till after the elections to fully implement. They're going after Kauai is feral soon, and here's the solicitation for the traps. State solicitation, this is actually, they're saying that they actually have a purchase order or something to that, equivalent to that. The collapsible cat traps is what's being ordered. General information, status released, Atlanta Natural Resources. And, you know, they were concerned and had expressed concern that Suzanne Case was instrumental in guiding, and it had been stated that there was going to be actions where they would take pellet guns and shoot the cats, and then eventually clean them all out, in the sense, well, we know what happened there. We had Dan Dennison, the communications person, got his little feelings hurt, you know, you understand. That she never said that. She never said that. Well, I was didn't say she said it. It was stated that a person close to the state Forestry and Wildlife Service that works under her made those statements and attributed this activity to her and the authorizing. So who was ordering these traps? Division of Forestry and Wildlife, procurement method, small purchase, RFQ, and the collapsible traps, 100 collapsible cat traps, Tomahawk live trap, 205 or equivalent. Trap must be 9 inches height by 9 inches wide by 26 inches deep. Trap must be made of 1 inch by 1 inch and 14 gauge wire. Traps must be able to collapse without any tools. Trap must not exceed 6 pounds in weight. Price must include taxes, shipping, and handling to 4398D Poor Lane, Loke Street in Lehui. So they're going to start over there, I guess, in Maui, in Lehui, Kauai. And release date of this document, of the actual solicitation, 7/18/2018. So just recently. So it'll go from 8/1/2018, contract start date, 8/2/2018. The required delivery date is a contract end date, 10/31/2018. Vendors are allowed to submit by the line item. No general comments, procurement officer, David G. Smith, buyer information, contact person. Ibarra, Lindsay H. Ibarra, and her email is Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, .H.Ibarra, I-B-A-R-A, at Hawaii.gov. Phone number is 808-274-3441. Specifications, contact information, same as buyer. Delivery point table shows entry. So anyway, this is what's going on now. Again, we'll have to wait and see if we know that Suzanne Case, and we have to manage alien species and species that are people dumping into the wild, but the humane treatment, the humane handling, and this thing of being the government and the people that feed cats. That's the government is always right, but they say there's 300,000 cats just on Oahu. Well, if that's true, how did it get there? Why were you sitting on your asses and doing nothing at that time? What was the, if it was this critical, where were your actions? You know, if it was that, and, you know, we got the toxoplasmosis, but I still say, you don't hear much from the DLNR talking about toxoplasmosis. Because, you see, within Suzanne Case's management team on the island of Molokai, Suzanne Case is entwined in commingling and fraternizing work activities with people that live on Molokai that has actually told me that they have hit and killed monk seals, have actually told me firsthand that he, one of the individuals, have found whales carcass floated up at Mo'omomi and would in turn set them afire and burn them and would not disclose that information to Noah. That individual has actually told me that he does not want the animals there, the monk seals there, because they present a problem and compete with the fish and, quote, they were never here historically. So, but these are people that are working directly with Suzanne Case in her community fisheries in division of this, whatever it is. It's really not community-based fisheries management effort. There may be another name for it, but it's similar. So I've had firsthand speak and talk with those. And in doing so, after receiving this information, I attempted to, you know, first of all, confirm and quite a bit of it. And I asked, and the individual told me, you know, yeah, my son discovered one of the monk seals there, but nobody had seen anybody around, so he took pictures of it. And he promised to send me the pictures, and there was no question if he had the pictures or not. But he had the pictures, but he was going to have his son to send me some of the pictures. And there's another person there, a lady that caretaker, they referred me to Auntie Diane, I think that's her name. And they just became completely silent about these monk seals that have been killed, and indicated that a couple, at least three occasions in recent past, he has either discovered or handled, or but subsequently either pour gasoline or diesel fuel on them and burn them on there, because he was concerned that when you have a carcass of a whale, it kills the immediate area. Those were his words, from the oil, if it's a whale or what have you, a monk seal, and then it creates problems. But I suspect, as he had told me, the monk seals are competitors in his mind, and so therefore it would ruin. So going back to the Department of Land and Natural Resources, so I get that information. I contact DLNR. They tell me, it belongs to the feds. You have to talk to them. We don't have anything. But their officer, the DLNR game warden that's stationed on the Molokai, actually was there on the scene, took pictures, and they refused to give them. So this toxoplasmosis BS is what it is, because if it was good science and based on good signs and good solid concerns, you wouldn't have these games. You would have interest in asking me, what is it that you know about this? How is it that you live in Mililani or live in on the island of Oahu and you are able to tell us these great details? But instead, the NOAA says, well, one of the monk seals that I had made a request for pictures were decomposed, and to state that NOAA did not want this monk seal, this decomposed image, out floating around in the public. But you never hear NOAA say anything when there's a whale, a carcass of a whale, or the monk seal or a turtle. They'll put it on TV, slashed up, right? And so this is really, it's kind of tricky, because if they don't want to give the pictures out to the public, why do we think that they are really looking for, or there's a chance that they really give it rat's butt and really try to find out? This person told me, this is how intimate they are with the whales. He told me a small humpback whale, and this humpback whale died, washed up, and it was a problem in that how did it die? Well, it looked like someone had hit it or stabbed it or cut it or something, right? And you ask him, well, what happened to it? Well, I burn it. What do you mean you burn it? Well, that's what I do. I'm the caretaker of this property, of this area, and I'm involved with the NOAA and Suzanne Case and her efforts. And so I burn them. Well, number one, you shouldn't be burning anything. Number two, you shouldn't be touching them. And number three, you should be reporting them. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show on talk808.com. Took a brief break there and taking up where we left off. We were talking about this DLNR and NOAA's handling of the monk seal and the recent email that we got where DLNR is ordering cat traps, and some of the people are concerned that this is the beginning of the massive slaughter of cats or eradication of cats or however you wish to put it, if you're scientifically inclined or emotionally inclined or what have you. There's no doubt that there should be some kind of management in place to address the impact on cats and the native environment or the endangered species to take. But whatever it is, it must be sanctioned by the public, not offensive, not inhumane, and you're not going to be realistic if you're not, you haven't been realistic of government bodies to actually think that all you can do is browbeat the people that are feeding. It does not matter if someone is feeding or not. It shouldn't matter to the government. If, in fact, you think it is such a problem and you've quantified it as a problem and you know that it is a problem, what the hell are you waiting on, and why this long debate, and why is it that you have to attack the people that are spay, neuter, release? Those are great resources that could probably work with you, and you could incorporate those people into your efforts. But no, you're mighty, and scientifically you got the degrees, but you're operating at a degree that's unreal. Just it's unbelievable. I participated in this just to study it, to see how, in fact, the government agencies interact with people that are caretaking or feeding the cats or operating in the caretakers' TNR program that is sanctioned by this city. And yet, you treat them like they are thugs in the night tripping around feeding cats. And it's like you want to regulate them. You want to harass them. In the meantime, the population of cats, as you claim, 300,000. So, you know, at some point, either quit the job, get out of the way, or it's better than nothing. You see, you haven't, if you were having the right to kill the cats, then why haven't you? What's stopping you over the years? If it's critical endangered species of concern, where's the urgency? But instead, you pick fights with the ladies and the men that are out there trying to do something, scratching and pecking, trying to get something. So, anyway, back to this Molokai matter. This Molokai matter with Suzanne Case and the people that she is fraternizing with in this Mo'omomi program needs to be investigated. Now, I don't know if the governor is going to be sensitive to the people, because now he's one, and, you know, not a lame duck, but a wise quacker. You see, he may not have any reason to listen to the people now. You know, he got 4 years and nothing in his way, and nothing's going to stop him. So we hope that that's not the case. But it is my observation and information that I have gathered that the parties that are responsible for killing the monk seals, and when I say killing, each of the monk seals that have been reported dead, at least eight of them, Noah, in its own words, admit that they have met their death at some hands of a human being, or some human being had a role in it with skull fractures or something that is blunt force trauma or whatever to the head, to the body. Now, I'm telling you, I wasn't there, but one individual that is affiliated with that program told me that he had burned whale carcass, monk seal carcass, and going back to something that really raises my curiosity, piques my curiosity, and that is, this individual tells me, when I first learned of this in a day or so that it had happened, I think I learned of the day that it was discovered, and I asked him, okay, does this animal show any external wounds? No. Is this animal shedding or molting any fur? No, because it may be. Did it exhibit any fishing hooks in its mouth? No. Did it have any fishing hooks or line attached to it, impaled on its flippers or anything? No. So, in other words, what do you think it died from? Somebody hit it over the head. I didn't put those words in his mouth. So then I'm asking, well, couldn't you send me pictures? Well, I'll send you pictures. We got some pictures of it because we just discovered it, and we got some fresh pictures. So it's not molting. It's not mashed, bangled, you know. And he said, no, it's in perfect condition. Looked like it's sleeping. Well, one day later, I'm asking the DLNR and NOAA for this. Pictures of this animal. I'm told, even after I'm told, oh, the animal was bagged up by the observer or the participant, volunteer with NOAA's program, marine management program, whatever this thing is, that they had taken pictures and they had placed the animal in a plastic bag and put it on the plane and shipped it over here to Oahu from Molokai. So with that kind of information, I'm seeking to work with Noah and say, this is what I've found. But instead, I get the runaround. I get told, no, we can't let you have any pictures because we don't want that bad image floating around with a dead monk seal, the carcass half decomposed. But you can stand at a whale beaching and our blubber that floats out in up on the shoreline, and you can take all the pictures you want. It's just as nasty, it's just as ugly or offensive and foul-smelling as anything that you could see. So this thing about toxoplasmosis, I relate all of this to say I don't trust Noah to do anything that's going to be true and honest about this. I really don't. And they can take it the way it is, and I've dealt with them, worked with them over the years. And when you become so secret in your approach and handling of things, everything is a secret. And then you turn around and you openly admit that you've lost eight monk seals on or near Molokai in the last few years. Something's not matching. And there's also, there were video of one gentleman beating a monk seal there on Molokai. Not Kauai, but now Molokai. And they won't release that. So with the, it's openly stated that we don't want monk seals here on Molokai because they compete with us. They eat our fish. If you're using a fish trap, they get in the fish trap and destroy it. But the thing is, these are native species. These are endangered species. They have to eat. And your techniques of fishing, I mean, that's par for the course. If you going to place it there, it's going to be an attraction to the monk seal. They're, you know, opportunistic. They don't know if there's a trap there and that's what it is and they're supposed to stay away. Or you, the human beings, get their share of fish. There's no agreement in that, and it's silly, but that's what happened. So we're going to try to really shake this thing loose with the monk seal and Noah's handling of it. But I think, and also this debate on cats, I don't have any respect for the DLNR's approach. It's us and them. They're in the mode of go out there and do a little Vimeo video of it, and then we give you and feed you what we want you to see and the image that we want to portray. But other than that, we don't want to talk in detail. This is the way the Department of Land and Natural Resources and NOAA behaves. But that's basically it. And I pull up something here in talking about the city and the contaminants and the medical center, Burns Medical Center. And I'm just going to, this is, excuse me. This is the Environmental Hazard Management Plan, and it was done a while back in 2010. But I want to share with you the deadly unknowns, just remind you why sounds or appears that we're repetitive and petty. And you think, well, maybe why are you always running around pointing at holes in the ground or mounds of dirt that is illegally dumped and all. And I don't think we've gotten to the level of understanding that we should. And so I'm going to continue to wail away at this and chip away at it until at least you understand that what we're dealing with. So this report, Environmental Hazard Management Plan, University of Hawaii, Cancer Research Center of Hawaii, Kaka'ako, Revision 1. So the purpose of this was the Cancer Research Center of Hawaii at the John Burns School of Medicine of Kaka'ako is the second and final phase of the University of Hawaii Health and Wellness Center development project. Soil sampling at the project site have shown that significant levels of chlorinated pesticides, lead, and barium contaminations are present and may pose a risk to construction workers, contractors, employees, students, guests, visitors, and environment during the construction of the CRH. Now, again, the question, what does this have to do with anything? Well, I want you to know that we have contaminated these lands so badly that even though something as simple as building a building and erecting a building or a facility or an educational facility or a research center, it poses a risk because of our practices, our past practices. And why do I say this? Because I offer this to say that we should always keep one eye on, at least one eye on government as it handles the environmental matters and issues here, or issuing of permits, or sanctioning certain activities and practices and these policies that they have to tolerance. So, you know, it meets our standard. Well, we're talking about people that are overworked, unskilled, don't have the expertise, because if they did, we wouldn't have to pay millions of dollars to hire out 8 companies that actually know how to do lead tests and do all of that and research and what have you. So the people that you see in the office knows nothing, and they're just being guided by politics. So The Environmental Hazard Management Plan is to educate the University and Hawaii employees, contractors, regarding the potential risk associated with residential potential risk. This EHMP describes corrective measures. Site description. The CRH will be located on the southeast corner of the John A. Burns School of Medicine at Ilalo Street and identified by TMK blah blah. The project site covers approximately 1 acre and is centered 890 feet north of the Pacific Ocean at the elevation of site history. Now, this is practices that the historical use of this land was sanctioned and okayed by intelligent people, people that to be hired, you required to have a college degree and have an expertise and you were an engineer. And so the site history, the Kaka'ako waterfront area is a man-made peninsula created sometime between 1884 and 1909. The peninsula was first occupied by the U.S. Army, Fort Armstrong, specifically the area that was to become Jabsum, was used as a quarantine station by both the military and the State of Hawaii Department of Agriculture until 1970s. It is believed that the activities associated with the quarantine station were the primary sources of the chlorinated pesticide and barium contamination in the soil at the project site. In 1974, the property was leased to Produce Center Development Limited, who in turn subleased the property to various produce packaging and distribution companies while in operation. The land Makai of the parcels 9-10 was the Kaka'ako incinerator landfill, which began operation sometime after 1927. The landfill accepted ash from Kaka'ako incinerator and Kapalama incinerator, both of which burned waste from various residential and commercial sources. Upon closure of the landfill, the land was transformed into Kaka'ako Waterfront Park, which opened in November of 1992. So you go down there and you play around and you have your kids sliding on the hills and the dirt and ingesting the dirt and exposing the dirt to them, to the skin and breathing. And this was a toxic waste dump. Historical map shows the presence of seawall located, and the seawall existed between Fort Armstrong and the ocean prior to the beginning of the landfill operation, and currently acts as a barrier to contamination from the landfill to Makua land areas, to Mauka land areas. You see, this thing is still leaking, and all that's been dumped there, leaching out into the ocean there. Construction of the Java became, regional jail. We'll go on. Site investigation. Contaminants of concern. This is what's found there now. The primary contaminants of concern, COC, based on the August 26, 2002 comprehensive study, summary of phase two environmental site. See how fancy this is? And you still got contaminants in the environment. So it's real fancy. You got all the EHPs and the AMPs and the COCs, and what we're doing is getting SCREWED. The preliminary soil sampling report found no new contaminants of concern in the specific project area. Aldrin, Dildrin were found in concentrations that exceeded Hawaii Department of Health levels of Tier 1 EALs, environmental action levels, at three of the four new soil sampling locations and depths of 2 to 4 feet below ground surface. Additionally, the site observations made during the utility line investigation found that localized patches of lead ash were encountered in various areas of Mauka of the seawall. These observations have led to this section. It is intended to provide a summary of all the... But anyway, lead, originally it was believed that a layer of lead-contaminated soil in the form of lead ash existed where the Kakaako incinerator landfill once operated and was bounded by old seawall that was buried in place approximately 60 feet north of the southern property boundary and the ocean to the east, west, and south. Presently, this area of contaminated soil is covered by Japsum, Makai parking lot, landscaping Kakaako waterfront. So what you have here is, let's go back and look at this. You have the sewage treatment plant dumping sewage out in an outfall that is out in the ocean. Maybe they say a mile and a half, but we've asked for copies of the records to review in the video. They have to video the actual outfall as a requirement of a part of the permitting process or the permit conditions. The city does. And keep those records, but we've had a difficult time in getting them. It's an expense and what have you. So this Noah decides to say, well, gee, toxoplasmosis is caused by the cats defecating in the feces of the cats and or ingesting food and ingesting the cyst of the old cyst of the toxoplasmosis, gondii, or whatever it is. And so that's right there at the ocean. You heard that it was where it's located. It's right on the ocean front. And the landfill itself at Kakaako, the lead, the barium, and all of that is in the water. Now, this is a mammal. The monk seal is a mammal. And if it's problematic to these chemicals and contaminants and DDTs and all are problematic for humans, then quite naturally it would be a problem for monk seals. And if that's the case, is this leaking toxic land sites, and then they dump trash there, so municipal trash, solid waste, garbage, chemicals. Is this contributing to the demise of the monk seal? So, are they ingesting water and contaminants and pesticides from the Kakaako landfill that's leaching? It's right there on the ocean. But if you go up to the sewage treatment plant, you would be equally concerned. Because when we say sewage, you and I know that in the general sense, it's humans go at their homes and restaurants or where businesses and they go to the bathroom, they defecate, they flush down the toilet, and it goes to the wastewater treatment plant. But then you're using the sewer lines, the water goes there down your shower, the chemicals that you wash your toilets out with, and all kinds of chemicals are flushed down the drain. And all that ends up out in the water. And so bacteria from human beings that are sick, human beings can also have toxoplasmosis. Now, there's a debate. Well, in humans, it can't propagate itself. I have a pad here that talks about it. But again, mongoose and other species can have this. Birds can even ingest the toxoplasmosis. So when you got that, and then you go over to Molokai, and they're killing monk seals. And Noah is not really that excited because they're trying to cover up for Suzanne Case. Because in reality, Suzanne Case is supposed to be protecting them because it is a state resource. But not only that, Suzanne Case, under her purview, gets $1 million annually from Noah to protect the monk seal and other marine mammals. But if she has a fisheries program, a community-based fisheries program in a certain area that she wants to tout as being a success for her nonprofit efforts and the relationship with other nonprofits, you notice I didn't say with state agencies, but with nonprofits. So there are some big questions to be raised about this, what is going on. And I raised the issue with the environmental concerns to say, once again, they can dictate the narrative by talking about toxoplasmosis. They can say, kill the cats. And I'm not basing this conversation on just cats. I'm looking at, what about the ethics of the government? How is it that it could be selective in its enforcement? Or it could be so casual in its approach and partner up with individuals that are actually openly stating that they're killing or destroying the carcasses of animals without a proper permit. And by the way, you have to have special permits to handle any parts of a marine mammal or to take or disturb any, knowingly and intentionally disturb any marine mammal, even their fur, even their bones, anything. You need special permits. You can't just go out and take them and pile them up and burn them. And so if he burned these animals on Molokai in the fisheries management area, what's the purpose of doing that? And secondly, where is the necropsy done on these? If he's burning them and they don't come over, and by the way, he said he doesn't even bother to call Noah. He leave that up to the observers, but if they don't call, he won't be calling. So we have specific information on individuals, but approaching Noah. So we're going to take a break in this hour, and we'll be back shortly. This is the Carol Cox Show on Talk 808. Aloha. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show here on Talk808.com. Thank you for joining me. This is our new venue. You're more than welcome to call in at 782-6627 and tell us what you have and if you have anything you'd like to share with us out there and talk about a little politics. But we're going to pick up here with another little talking about politics and how it all relates to what's the cost of politics. There's a tremendous cost because we really don't know. Hello.
Hello, Cora Cobbs.
Yes.
This is Randall. I had a missed call from you.
Yeah, you called me earlier.
Oh, I called. I probably called you. Okay. I just returned in that call.
All right. So what's happening?
Yeah, see, nothing much. Yeah. Everything's, I guess, all right at the boat ramp and just in Lanika. Yeah, they were moving all the boats out.
Yeah, I thought I said Randall's called me. There must be something hot there.
No, mine's all good. I talked to the game warden. It said only in Lanika I cried.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, how you been, man?
Pretty good, brother. Can't complain.
Yep. Hanging in there and doing what we got.
I just said the other night, told some friends, I got to get over there. There's a guy named Mike that I was going to go visit. I thought I'm going to have to stop in and visit you guys.
Yeah.
I go over there, but you guys are not around twice, but I figured you've been.
Yeah, sometimes they hang in the middle, you know, in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Not the way at the end, but in the middle, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay, dope, man.
All right, brother.
Later.
Thank you. Aloha.
Okay.
Okay. So with this, all of the politics coming and going, all the music is on there. We're trying to, and I do apologize right now. It's sound again disjointed, but really, I want to make sure that these are dry runs and, you know, just figuring it all out, but I think we got a pretty good system here. So we're going to take a call right now from a good morning caller. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
So I don't know if you got to follow the elections last night.
Oh, I followed them until I got tired of it and went to sleep.
I figured you did.
You know, I mean.
So what are your thoughts about it?
Well, not much. I think that in the early hour, I was talking about the welfare line. The welfare line that exists there. And so what's going to happen is that, you know, when those that lost their bid for office,
mm-hmm.
Now they gave up their jobs, senators and whatever. So what do they do now for work and so what they do is they go and get appointed by the Democratic Party, get them a deputy position of this office or that office or this agency.
Or they get a commission job or something.
Mm-hmm.
Get on a commission or a board or something like that. Something that'll keep them little bit of profile.
I'm talking about pay. They
right.
They like Norman Sakamoto. I mentioned his name earlier. He lost his bid for. What was it? In fact, he ran for. Did he run for lieutenant governor? Or one of those, and next thing you know, you see him, he's at the DLNR, DHHL.
Right.
So.
It really depends. If you look at somebody like Ed Case, who won his primary last night,
mm-hmm.
He was actually working in the private sector, working at Outrigger.
Right.
So it varies depending on some of these candidates.
Oh, of course.
Some of them go back to the private sector.
Of course.
If they were in the private sector. They go back to the private sector. But, you know, they'll have a better job than most people in Hawaii, of course, because a number of them are either lawyers or they're basically executives or people in the private sector, in the business sector.
Yeah, that's what I shared this morning earlier. And when we're talking, this pertains strictly to the government employees. And those that are not, or does not fall under this flag, then they need not worry. It's the discussion isn't about them. You know, what you do in private business and is quite all right with me. But there is this practice here, and I don't know if many people know it, that you always got a job if you're in the Democrat Party. And I'm sure the Republicans will do the same thing because Lingle did the same thing. She hired a bunch of people.
Right. It doesn't matter what party. It's just that the Democrats are in power here and have been in power for over 50 years. So that's where not only the jobs are, but where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just where the action is. I mean, there's no action in the Republican Party.
Really? Sounds like every time I pick up the paper, there's a new alert. There's something, somebody did something wrong or candidate is declared running and then just as quick as they declare they're running, they're disqualified.
Right, like in that district you had from Samoa.
Yeah.
That was a really clear situation. I mean, she was disqualified because she's not a U.S. citizen. She's a U.S. national. I mean, it's a little bit complicated to go into, but she's technically not a U.S. citizen. And some of these American territories, people there don't have the absolute – it's strange to say, but they don't have the absolute same rights as that are conferred generally to U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm. So how did that – I don't know the background. I did call Eric Ryan. I think he was instrumental or had participation in the revealing of this. But how – did she just wake up one morning and say that there's an open position and I'm going to register as a Republican? And if so, when did she register as a Republican and then declare she was going to run?
I don't have the information on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But she was disqualified. I know that Canada was disqualified.
So my question would be...
She's from America and went out a U.S. citizen. So you have these distinctions. Mm-hmm. Eric Ryan isn't really much of a source to go to since he's been kicked out of the Republican Party. But that's a whole other story.
But Eric, if he would had the chance to tell us, he's probably the happiest man in the whole USA to be kicked out of the Republican Party. The Republican Party should have told that lady that, hey, let me ask you this. Might know better than I do. Uh-huh. Can a non-American citizen join a political party?
That's a good question. You know, it's funny for me to ask because I'm not, having been a journalist for 22 years, and I've studiously avoided any affiliation with political parties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a member of any political party. I guess I'm unusual that way in that people in the media, they're members of parties, but they don't talk about it, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm not a member of any party, so I'm a complete, if technically the term would be independent.
Right.
Technically. Because I'm not a member, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, not a member of any party.
Yeah, I was just curious, though, because there was such
it's
fanfare.
A good question in relation to this. I think that's a very valid question. And your other point, which made me curious last night, because I'm looking at the election results last night, and I'm looking at that, that got brought up, read a little about it. It struck me as odd that her status was not reviewed by someone before she entered, not only as she entered as a candidate, but before she entered as a candidate.
Right.
There didn't be any vetting of that. Because that seems like something that you want to kind of get into. Now, that having been said, there are always tricky situations when people run for office. Look at Rick Gates in Wai'anae. He actually ran as a Green Party candidate. And I know the Democratic Party's rules are you're not supposed to be a member of another party. I mean, if you join their party, you have to have stopped being a member of another party for like a couple of years or something like that. And I don't think that one is automatically allowed to run as a Democrat if you run for another party. Like if you run in for another party, like I said, I don't know how, but I know the rules are, they have rules specifically dealing with if you're a member of another party or you run as a member of another party, run as a Democrat. I think it's like a 2-year, and I don't want to get specific because I don't want people saying, you're not right about that. But a period of time that has to elapse before you can not only join the party, but I believe run as a candidate for the Democratic Party, if you run as a member of another party. So what's odd to me about the situation that we were discussing with that candidate was that she comes from a U.S. territory.
Right.
Basically a possession of the United States. But she applied to run as a candidate, and that wasn't looked at. Because she's from American Samoa. American Samoa is not a state of the United States. It's territory of the U.S. And that situation is very different.
Mm-hmm.
So it strikes me as a little odd, but there's a lot about the Hawaii Republican Party that I find odd. Apparently, no one did their homework there.
Yeah, and so I saw that, and I thought, wow, well, this is consistent with, well, we're not going to tell you how badly misdirected we are, and we're just going to show you how ignorant you are of the rules, and so therefore we're going to show that you're not qualified. But to sign up, you would think there would be some, like you say, vetting or team or committee say, okay, if Carol and Mr. X is going to go and become a candidate, let's make sure his packet, you know, he arrived, that he's qualified, that he can run, that he's old enough, that he's, you understand.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, your point here, to me, because that came up in the election coverage too, you know, maybe it lasted a couple minutes or so on, I don't know, it was, I'm trying to remember where I saw it on, I don't know, it was Channel 9 or on Channel 2, but it struck me as odd that she was allowed to enter as a candidate, apparently known in GOP for their homework. I mean, granted, you can, once you pay that fee and once you sign up, you can pretty much run as a candidate. I mean, I know of homeless people that have run as candidates for office here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, I mean, you know, so, I mean, in my view is if a homeless person can run for candidate, surely someone from, you know, a U.S. Trust territory or what have you can. But it struck me as odd, and I've covered elections before as a journalist, and I went, it just strikes me as something that that party should have at least, if not examined, then at least looked at, because she's from American Samoa.
Right.
Right off the bat, it would have been, I mean, if you were from another state, okay, it doesn't matter, you know, but right from American Samoa. So it's kind of tricky. Your point, however, that maybe they kind of decided, okay, we're going to invalidate her, was a way for them to save face. And I think you may be right about that. I can't say automatically that you are, but mm-hmm. It would be a lot.
Well,
it would be a plausible one.
They are at a minimum, seeing Eric being able to expose that or knowing that, but I started to ask, well, okay, that's good. We kept a person that's, quote, non-qualified entity from mm-hmm. being in government and
right.
In legislative process. But what does that say about the body of the party? Maybe that explains that the party should take note and say, no wonder we have half of a person left in the Republican Party. And because
but
if...
Fifth of a party, what you're saying?
They're what?
They're three-fifths of the party, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, not even that, because...
I mean, they're a shell of a party. I mean, if you look at the Republican Party, they're a shell. Not only did they have to kick Eric Ryan out, who they should have kicked out, for reasons I won't go into here. People can look at my blog piece about that on Medium.com. But also they had to kick out a guy who was I think, outright racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a pro-white candidate or something along that line, or pro-white, sorry, party member. So the white GOP is here's my theory about them. And I wrote a piece on Civil Beat in, I think it was 2016 or 2017, called Why Republicans Fail or Why They Don't Win. And my theory when it comes to the Hawaii Republican Party, I mean, this is backed up by history, is the fact that the Republicans were never really created here in the islands. It's different compared to other states. First of all, Republicans were individuals who presided politically over a oligarchy, unlike in other states. You didn't have the same situation in other states. First of all, Hawaii was a territory, so it wasn't a state prior to 1959. The Republicans presided over an oligarchy. So they didn't really reside over a wholly democratic, and I don't mean that in a party sense, but in the general sense, wholly democratic area, a wholly democratic region, because essentially it was a very closed, and not only closed economically, but closed politically, a closed political and economic system. So once Hawaii got opened up, and Hawaii, and they received real competition from Democrats, they were unable to win. This was partly demographic reasons, but because the GOP was not really constructed to win, they're not constructed to compete. If you look at a number of the races in last night's election, there were a number of Democrats who won their legislative races outright. Why? No opposition on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they were unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had, it was primary.
Well.
So they're not really built to compete as a party in a truly democratic electoral and political system. the Republicans were basically in Hawaii, basically constructed to compete over a rigged and basically completely rigged, completely structured system that would only benefit them and people like them.
And I think that that's evident in the gerrymandering. They seem to be quite aggressive and quite reliable on to the highest degree of gerrymandering and vote blocking and ruse.
Right.
When you don't see them running a campaign to say get out and vote campaign.
Right. That's another good point. But when you compare Republicans in Hawaii to the mainland, there's no comparison because those Republicans, they know how to compete. Those parties in other states know how to compete.
But they still rely on gerrymandering and voter blockage.
Right, those are tactics that they use. Right.
Yeah.
Those are tactics they use.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is outside of gerrymandering and suppressing votes.
But what's left?
Minority votes.
What's left, though? I mean,
but at least they can compete electorally. That's what I'm saying. In Hawaii, they can't even do that.
Yeah.
They can't even do the basics in Hawaii. They can't even put up a full slate of candidates for every single legislative council and other office, for legislative and council offices here. They can't do it. They cannot do it. If you can't do that, what makes you think that you're going to be able to do it? They concentrate on big races.
Right.
Their biggest shot this year is Andrea Tupola, who beat a guy who came into your studios, I believe, to talk, John Carroll. And John Carroll was just so deluded. This is a guy who was quoted in Civil Beat as saying, I thought I would be blowing her away by
now.
Okay. This guy is deluded.
But I mean, positive thinking gets you everything, right?
She's right. He was leading her in March.
Right.
Significantly.
Mm-hmm.
That changed automatically because she's a relatively new political figure. She's only been in the legislature for a couple terms.
Right.
Some degree of popularity in her district.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is a far-right candidate. There's no doubt about that. I mean, she's a right-wing, highly conservative person, so that's a big drawback. But beyond that, she's kind of a fresh face. That's what the Hawaii GOP is looking for, or what they're clinging to. And so she's their best hope. I mean, John Carroll is a fossil.
Well,
I
mean, but hold on.
In terms of
hold on.
And she's a non-entity at this point.
Hold on. So let's take just those three instances. You got the Republican Party that dumps its member and throws her out to the dogs and says she's not a citizen. But
wow,
they've
been kind of harsh, but yeah.
But they've been dealing with her. I hope she didn't just show up one night and put in an application, say I'm running, and the next day they discovered that that would be more egregious and more painful to accept.
You may be right.
But if so, shame on them. And secondly, if John Carroll is smoking or whatever, got high hopes and delusional, then that may be true. But guess what's really who's really delusional? The entire Republican Party and its supporters think Andrea Tupola can become governor in this state. First of all, delusion.
I agree 100%.
And then who's this young lady that the Democrats voted? She's in New York. They voted. She's 28 years old. And
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Right. And so the Republicans just slamming away at her. And then I heard I was chatting with some Republicans here, and they were telling me how big of a socialist this young lady was, Alexandria was, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, see, this is why you have no one in your ranks now in the Republican Party. You might as well shut the doors because you're too busy criticizing and attacking and gerrymandering and denying people the right to vote, that you're not going to get anything. And then to top it off, I heard Sam Sloan last night say, well, what the Democrats need to do. Well, no. I don't think you need to bother with giving advice to the Democrats. Because if you did, then I would I would say to the average Democrat that listened to Sam Sloan, say, you must be out of your mind.
Right.
Sam Sloan lost. He was around when the party dwindled and wilted.
That's right. He used to say, I mean, when I used to cover the opening day of the legislature, you know, when they did the roll call, Sam would say, still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you won't hear his voice anymore in the legislature.
And he got his high. What do you get? His retirement and.
Oh, he got defeated. He got defeated
by chain. Right. But I mean, he stayed in long enough to get a pension or something, right?
Right. So. Right, because I think the district got the district. It was reconfigured. I think the district got reconfigured, and he flipped, went over from the council, and went up against him. And I said, I knew Sloan was a dead man walking. I mean, I just knew his goose was cooked.
Yeah, well, he also had, you know, on issues with his relationships, and I think the media was kind of nice to him on that. So.
I mean, you know, he's a, how do I put this? Maybe his nickname should be Don Juan. I don't know.
I don't know, but I keeping it within the discussion of politics, I
won't get into that.
My advice to Sam Sloan and anyone that puts an R before their name is that, first of all, you don't need to give advice to the Democrats because, first of all, the Democrats are not that structured either. So you're basically throwing good advice after bad. They already predisposed. They have various camps in place. They could, and when a guy like Ed Case can just pop in, pop out, popping fresh dough, right? He
right.
couldn't.
Wait
your turn, and you know, remember they said he jumped in ahead of the line and ran against Akaka, so he was banished by Inouye.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that a real party or Democrat party, or is that what is that called when you wait your turn in a democracy and be appointed, or you know, it's a good time, not as strategy, but because the crowd says you should.
Well, I guess Case has come out of exile. You know, he's come. I guess the party leaders have opted to basically allow him. They feel he's been punished enough, so. He jumped into this race. Actually, for once, he made the right move because it was a race of largely, I mean, to be brutally honest, opportunistic individuals. It was a good strategy on his part. I mean, he made the right move moving into this race. Because if you look at some of the candidates in the race, not all of them, but some of them. You had two real opportunists in this race. Beth Fukumoto was one, and Doug Chin was the other. Doug Chin was basically running as the anti-Trump candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Doug Chin thought that his opposition to Trump via his tenure as Attorney General filing cases against Trump in terms of the travel ban would net him the seat, and he underestimated it. He didn't have enough political capital to do so because he had never run a political campaign before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he underestimated. He probably thought he had a very good shot to win, and he might have had Case not stepped in. You know, you have to give Case a little credit. I don't like to give people credit for anything in politics, but you have to give him a little credit because he was adroit enough to jump into this and jumped into it late and managed to get a sizable victory.
Yeah.
But it's clear the support. The party said, okay, we're gonna give you another chance. And, you know,
had no choice. They couldn't go out and because they had the distraction would have been Ige and Hanabusa. I mean, the Democratic Party was had a gun to their head in both ways because who do you support? You know, your favorite friend, girlfriend, or your favorite senator. I mean, there a lot of energy waste and a lot of money went into that. And then many of those.
Are you talking about the governor's race?
Yeah. And so Case is look at the Ernie Martin. He put in for it, right? And let's just analyze some of this, become real true analysts and say, I was convinced to vote for Ernie Martin immediately when I saw it was about his bald head. I mean, you know, if you deliver, present yourself in that fashion, and yeah, you come home and the dog's licking your face. Okay, well, what does that got to do with politics? I want to see the hyena. You be able to show me what you can do to deal with the hyenas that they're in Washington, right?
Right.
That will. But you're a nice guy.
I guess they were going for the soft sell and not the hard.
Well, But see, most of America, especially the people in Hawaii, they are the one. The younger folks are the ones looking for jobs and. And no promise here, and they don't want to hear about some guy's bald-headed haircut.
Right.
I mean, if
well,
I could...
Well, this is what I would say. This is the problem with what's going on politically in Hawaii. The real issues are not being looked at.
No, they're not.
Wages are the real issues. The wages here are a disgrace, and no one wants to say it's a disgrace except people like me, but people like me don't count because I'm... You know, I'm not a power broker, and I'm certainly not a media power broker, so I don't have much of a say other than to say what I'm saying as an individual. Wages here are a disgrace. Housing is a major issue, not to mention homelessness. I mean, that to me is basically epidemic proportions here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the state can say, well, we've brought down homeless, a tad, a little bit. What good is that going to do when every day, since I live in Honolulu, every day I walk these streets and I can see tents in various parts of the city and people walking down here,
mm-hmm.
nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not solving the situation. Not that the situation can be solved completely.
Mm-hmm.
It can't. But at least it can be reduced. It's not being reduced. So you've got wages that are a shame, that are shameful. You've got housing, affordable housing, which is in lesser supply. The inventory is down because what you're building are upscale condominiums and resort resorts that are people who can afford to pay six figures and up, as mm-hmm. opposed to it be five figures in a year. And this is, one is helping to feed the other, meaning the lack of affordable housing is helping to feed homelessness. So you look at wages, lack of wages, not to mention jobs that don't pay very much, jobs that themselves are not very good. These issues are simply not being discussed in a real political context, in a real political agenda-setting notion.
Yeah.
So when these avoided, which are in-your-face issues, you cannot ignore them. People who work for a living cannot ignore the fact that they're not making much money. People who are homeless cannot afford ignore the fact that they're homeless. People who have a hard time finding decent rentals cannot ignore that fact. Are they discussing it? If they are discussing it, not with any kind of seriousness or any kind of utilitarian purpose.
Well, They erected a new statue worth $250,000, and they mm-hmm. put some green grass on the park there, that's probably going to inspire many of the homeless Hawaiians and many of the homeless to really be energized and really change their life.
Right.
You know, and meantime, don't sleep or sit on the sidewalk.
The irony of that is when I went by there the other day, not far from where that statue was somebody lying down in the park.
Yeah.
Brown. Obviously a homeless person. So, yes, you can go and spend money, $250,000 on statue and on grass. Guess what? There's still going to be homeless in the area.
Mm-hmm.
There's still going to be people living without affordable housing, a place to stay, a place to live. It changes nothing, including the weather. Nothing gets changed.
Well, what happened here was you watching something that's that has been building and building and building, and its foundation is just as unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have. You got many of the people that are in government are the mayor and is a son of the plantation era, right? You know his mindset and mentality. And right. And then you hear people. Now, if Donald Trump had his wife to speak in a foreign language when he ran for president, they would have raised hell with him. But here you can see, I think Case's commercial had Japanese speaking. So it's talking about horse whispers and whispering, you know, dog whistle. You know, what was that all about? I mean, I thought she was an American citizen, and a couple others had Japanese language in their advertisement. What is that saying? Is there a block of people that vote just on ethnicity?
Well, that's always been the case in Hawaii.
Yeah.
You have to look at different ethnic groups.
So, you know, and I think, I say in 3 years, Hawaii is, you're going to see it upside down. And the Green Party that runs around and only green when it's election time, they need to improve the independence. I mean, I think for me personally, they lose me when they start telling me, well, you know, the Democrats are going after Donald Trump. Well, I find Donald Trump to be offensive to me, and offensive when I see what he's doing to other people. Now, if that is not enough for you to step back and say, well, gee, if he's that offensive, then I shouldn't be supporting, because I'm sitting here, I live with you every day and talk with you every day, and you're friends, so I don't think, you know. But instead, oh, he's the best thing we ever had. Really?
Well, again, I would say, when you look at that, the people that ran as explicitly anti-Trump, they didn't succeed, at least in that first congressional race. You had basically Ed Case, who is essentially a Republican under another name, making his kind of milquetoast, oh, well, I'm willing to work with whoever. But he's essentially a Republican under another name, not unlike other so-called Democrats in Hawaii. If you want to find out where the real Republicans are, go to the Democratic Party in Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's where they are. Literally. Some of them have literally switched, just like Beth Fukumoto, literally switch party designation so they can run as Democrats and they can win seats. You know, the honest ones at least still have an R under their name. They may not be getting it there.
That's the Democrats' way of gerrymandering without lines.
Yeah.
You see, you look at Beth Fukumoto and you say, she's pretty solid. So you go and court her and you tell her, look, if we can bring you over here, you're going to bring your votes with you. And we're not going to bother put you through a car wash or brainwash to clean your brains of the Republican stance. Just keep that.
You can still be
a Republican, but. We've taken that block of votes out. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. See,
and so you do that with...
whether they actually put her or not, that may or may not be the case. But you're describing what the formula is in Hawaii.
Well, yeah, and Kimberly Pine.
The two-party system. Well, why don't we have a two-party system and competitive? I mean, that's a joke. You don't need a two-party system in Hawaii because it's basically within one party.
Yeah.
The Democrats are essentially Republicans and so-called Democrats within the Democratic Party.
Because, and I think you can, I can offer something that will support that claim, and that Norman Sakamoto and Gary Aquino and those guys that were, quote, Democrats but high Christians and were fraternizing with Duke Iona and with the International Church, right? And then running those schemes and talking about seeing dead people raised up in Argentina and what have you. So there is some truth to that.
Right.
But you're not
dealing... that's the way it's always been. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what we're looking at here, the Democrat Party, if we can call it that, I think... you can draw the conclusion that many of them, their demise is handed to them by themselves because they're selfish. Instead of, if there was a party, an organized party, and I know we're in a democracy, but why would you need to run Donna McCarter Kim? Who else was it? Willa Sparrow.
And he was running for lieutenant governor.
Pardon me?
He's running for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, but they gave up their positions, you see.
Right.
And
well, they gave up their positions. Now they'll find another position.
Josh Green, Takuda, and what was the guy that I saw you like? Kaniela Ng.
Mm-hmm.
Now. Let's talk about that for a minute. I know you're close to his camp or have been around him. What the heck was he thinking?
And Daniela?
Yeah. I mean, how do you think you can defraud the public and then come back and stand in front of them and say, trust me, I'm going to have your best interest at hand?
Well, I don't think that's entirely fair to him.
Fair. A thief is a thief, brother. Whether you stole it by saying thank you or you stole it without say screw you. I mean, it's not his money to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Well, I would agree with that. But
yeah.
But I would say, in regards to that race specifically, here's what I would say. I would say that race in and of itself was, as I characterized it before. When you have an open seat like that, it's difficult because, you know, if you have a name brand candidate like Ed Cates, even though he's been a loser for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
he's still somebody who was in Congress. So he's somebody who has experience. Most of those candidates didn't have experience. They were newcomers.
Right, but why does a newcomer have to come with a stench to them?
Everyone has a stench.
No, but we're talking about elections and representation and legislators but not everyone. But see that
let me put it this way: if you're in electoral politics, you can't have clean hands.
Oh yeah, you can.
I no.
Yeah,
I
or and as they do in Saudi Arabia, you have
there's
no.
There's something awry with you. Never get out entirely clean.
And some of the Arab countries, they say, yeah, you will either have clean hands or no hands.
Well, I don't even want to go there.
Well, no, I mean,
but
when a person, because remember now, what they're all vying for mm-hmm. is that they want the key to our safe box that has our trust in it. You got to be above and have an impeccable past and a future and your behavior. You can't go and steal from us and then say, trust me, I'm going to represent you and I'm doing this for the folks. Well, wait now.
I would agree with that.
You can't
take what isn't yours and then say, well, I have your best interest at heart.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, some of these guys, young guys, I know they got it. I mean, I listen to them talk and I think, but then I ask, why do you have to dip yourself in cow manure and then walk amongst the people, the debutantes, and then think you're going to be accepted? You're tainted. You know,
right.
Kalani English over there on Maui, right?
Mm-hmm.
When
that
they caught him,
yeah.
huh?
That district, yeah.
Yeah, when they caught him doing cocaine and all, I mean, you might as well just say, okay, well, your people got representation from you, but you're done. You're our man. We own you. We'll let you stay in office, but we'll own you, and his people keep voting for him. So you get all that kind of behavior, and who suffers? The very people that they're representing, supposedly.
Well, there's no trust factor. You can't trust anyone. In fact, there becomes a dislike factor. I mean, I would say before I became a journalist, I never trusted politicians. Once I left journalism, I ended up disliking a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you simply see how really filthy and disgusting a number of them are
mm-hmm.
without going into details
mm-hmm.
about people. You really just do see that. And if you have any basic character as a person, if you have a basic, if you're not an indecent person, and you're not a person, well, a person who believes in at least basic tenets of morality.
Yeah, so
you can't abide by that.
Before we go out of time here, what is your blog and your where you post on your website and all?
It's at medium.com.
Medium.com.
Medium, www.medium.com, under my name, Albert Lanier.
And spell that so people can listen.
That's L-A-N-I-E-R.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me just mention a couple of things briefly.
Go ahead. Go ahead. That's the joy of having a blog. You can go when you want to and shut it off when you want.
Yeah, I know. One was, as far as I was concerned with this election, the biggest race was not the governor's race. It was not even the congressional race. It was the lieutenant governor's race. And the reason I say that on the Democratic side, and the reason I say that is because of the amount of money that was seen in this year's race alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the winner of this race, Josh Green. He had over $400,000 pumped into him by what was Carpenters Union, what used to be Pacific Resource Partnership. It's under in their name now. And you have to kind of wonder why this money is being pumped into an office that has really no real power, no real bite legislatively, no real, I don't want to say it's worthless, but I mean, years ago it was running elections. Now that's taken care of by the Office of Elections.
It was done there's been some organization in amongst the ranks in the last year and a half, Takuda and those guys, and they're just, you know, adjusting their sights on. And I think that union jumped in and supported Josh Green to just throw a whole wrench into the system. I think because Lieutenant Governor's office stands for nothing. To be OIP, right. Office of Information Practices, right? And there's one other something. What is it that they oversee?
Well, it used to be elections. Now I don't think there's any statutory oversight.
Yeah.
Specifically. I mean, I would have to go look up the Constitution again, but I don't believe there's any specific statutory oversight that the LG office has now.
Yeah.
But I think your point is a good one, to throw a wrench, because, I mean, Jill Takuda, when she was in the Senate, was in dealing with budget.
Right, and Ways and Means.
Caused some, you know, Ways and Means, and had caused some, she was fairly, you know, she got a little controversial while she was there. What was odd about that race was the fact that she conceded, even though she lost, I mean, was that to what, the second printout or so? Even though she was down only by 2-3 points, she lost by like 2-3 percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if I were her campaign, I would never have had her concede, period. I would have said, you know, we're still hopeful, you know, you're in a fairly tight race. He did not win that race outright by significant percentage margins. He won it by 2-3 percentage. This is despite the fact he had considerable money being poured into his campaign.
And knowing the Hawaiian election process, I would have a recount. I'd ask because you can't trust him.
Oh, that's.
I wouldn't trust that. I think.
Oh, you know, the whole recount thing, that's a good idea, but try getting that done.
Well, no, I'm just saying, based on what we have and who we have running it, so.
It's funny because the governor, Abercrombie, was on, I think, Channel 9, KGMB.
Yeah.
Or Hawaii Now, as it is known. And he was talking about the OHA elections.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about blank votes. And he talked about the fact that, look at the number of blank votes here. It's like 300,000, over 300,000. Well, what I have told people over the years, when I did cover elections, I would get, as a reporter, I would get the actual results. right? Mm-hmm. What you see reported in the news is not all the results. It's just some of the statistics. They're not going to do everything. One of the things that I looked at was over and under votes, meaning somebody didn't vote or somebody picked more than one, plus bank votes. If you look at that in every race, there are significant numbers of under and over votes plus blank votes. I've been telling people over the years that the number of votes in numerous districts is significant in Hawaii. In fact, it's almost criminal. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that Abercrombie brought it out, but I've been telling people this for, 18 years or more?
Yeah.
20 years?
Is this the same Abercrombie?
And it's not brought out in the major media. It's not brought out, other than what I saw there. It's not brought out.
Is this the same Abercrombie that the polls were open and they didn't have enough ballots and all? Same guy?
Yeah, Governor.
Didn't take any action against the mm-hmm. manager and let him stay and gave him a raise? Oh, yeah. I saw that interview, too, and I thought, the problem with life as we get older, and some people never have any shame. He said that he'd been here 56 years in the political arena. And I'm saying to myself, but did you notice how screwed up it was?
Right. I've been talking about this with people because I'm not on the major local TV stations or radio or whatever. I've been talking about this for people for years.
Yeah.
I've been saying, you can look at the number of blank votes and under and over votes. It's crazy. I mean, yeah, there's a degree of votes. But I looked at this years ago. I said, if you take these votes, they could make a difference in this district and that district and
right.
that. Maybe wouldn't win, but he'd get closer. I mean, I've been saying this for years. I'm glad somebody brought it out, but it's like, this is nothing new to me. I mean, it's typical of what goes on here in Hawaii.
I mean, last night there was a common comment. There was Charles DeJoux, Neil Abercrombie, and Wahe, right? Mm-hmm. And then Kimberly Pine joined in with them later. And
right.
I'm thinking, so, the arsonists always return to the scene of the crime, the fire, right?
Right.
So,
in fact, in this
case,
the arsonists are the fire investigators.
Yeah, they are sitting here analyzing their screw-ups and their contributions to a screw-up. A car wreck that was about to happen, but they said, let's keep driving. And Abercrombie, what did he do to address homelessness? And he pointed Charles Alexander as a czar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look, what did we do with him? What did we get from him in addressing these issues? Environmental issues, schools issues, classrooms were still heated, right? And he's telling us he's been around for 56 years in this politics here in Hawaii. And, and I'm thinking, and I don't want your advice.
Yeah.
And Charles DeJoux, what advice would you vote for him? I wouldn't have him to stand watch over 7-Eleven that I have.
The only, the only advice Charles DeJoux can give is advice on losing races. Because that's all he knows how to do. He's a loser.
And
I know that some people won't like me saying that, but it's the truth.
No.
It's a fact.
Why
would you get someone on him as an analyst who's a loser? Kimberly Pines at least won races.
Yes.
Say what you want about her. She's won races. What has Charles DeJoux done? He's done nothing but lose congressional races.
Yeah. And so what does he do? He shows up articulating.
He's an arsonist who shows up as a fire visitor.
Yeah. And it's like, wait, now, I'm sorry, folks, but this is not my sense of. And then, what the Democrats have to do. And I'm thinking, really? You have the galls to sit here and tell the Democrats. You're a Republican Party that is vaporized. And you're sitting here now telling the Democrats what they should really listen to you because it would help.
Right. I equated Republicans there and their analysis last night on these stations about, Democrats or what have you.
Right.
Listening to Republicans in Hawaii give political advice is like trying to get advice about stocks from homeless people.
Mm-hmm. But you know, one thing though that really goes unspoken and unnoticed is that, but it was stated, Ige is the environmental governor. His woman Wong, the last night she was being interviewed, and said, "Well, you know, he is an environmental governor. He's a and the environmental community, the environmentalists, whoever they are, supports Ige, right? Through Susan Case and through that whole clique. So there is an element there. I think it was the Sierra Club backed him, right? So you, if you join the Sierra Club and you're a member of that, you likely to, whether you want to or not, when you pay your money as a member, you're a member, and they go out and say, "Now we're 22 million strong," or what have you. And do they consult you and ask, "Who do we support?" Or do they just, in this little town here, just the little lead pack, do the, you know, the bidding and doing the deciding who supports what? And so when Ige got that, I think that's what, as unreliable as it was, I don't believe that David Ige is an environmental governor. But but they stole the air from under Hanabusa's wings because she was going to glide in, but they ripped the air from her with that support of the statement that the environmentalists support him. And when in fact he supports, Ige supports building a major dairy, he allows violations on the Big Islands. They cover that up. They allow environmental violations on the parts of others and cover it up, right?
Right.
And let private industry take over DLNR. So.
Right. Well, the controversy in that race was one, Ige's comment about criticism isn't leadership.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
You're right.
Compliant leadership either.
You're right. That did take kind of like hit punch her in the nose, and she's had to stagger there. And it's like, no, this is when you really start to complain.
Right.
And you know,
I mean, the whole point of that race, the people didn't understand. They made a big deal last night about, oh, he came back from 20 points, and it looked like he was in trouble. You had three candidates in that race. You had Ige, you had Hanabusa, and you had Clayton Hee. Clayton Hee dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not be statistically, when you have only two major candidates in that race, the possibility that Ige could come back is not that illogical. Keep in mind, Hanabusa is not a candidate who is beloved. She's always been somebody who's ruffled feathers. She's always been somebody who has been seen as too big for her britches. And they try to make an issue of it with criticism isn't leadership. Oh, this is an attack on her as a female candidate.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that whole tactic was just ridiculous.
Well, but again, whether it was successful or not, it depends on how she reacted, and her people go, "Oh my God, we gotta," and so paranoia sets in, and when he jumped in, I think Hanabusa was ahead and going to win early on, and I think Ige and his camp knew that, so that's why they had he to go put his name on the list. So then we'd water down the votes, right? Dilute them.
Like a splitter. You have a splitter as a candidate.
Right. And so you're draining off, shaving off some. And so now all you got to do is rely on the PRP tactics. And remember now, the PRP, I think it's Linda McMillan, Carl Rhodes' wife, Cindy McMillan, I think, was with the PRP. Well, one of those, but some of the PRP tactics were applied on from and used by Ige, And I think Hanabusa had just had an inept staff surrounding her. They thought they were, because they were, she was, you know, Colleen Hanabusa, that their work wasn't going to be that hard. You know, they hadn't, right. She was a Muhammad Ali of the boxing community, the voting community, right? And so we don't have to really be aggressive, and we can just be selective as what we incorporate into the fight. Well, no.
Right. Well, in this case, she ended up Sonny Liston, not Muhammad Ali.
George Foreman.
She thought her punch would be devastating. In fact, she got devastated.
Yeah.
Not electorally. She lost by 5 or 6 percentage votes. I think it was about 5% votes. So it was a relatively close race. But she wasn't, in the end, she was simply too combative and too controversial a figure to win the election, in contrast to a guy who is basically not so much controversial. He is to an extent, but he's not threatening. Mm-hmm. He's mild-mannered. You look at that contrast, and then you have gender and sex playing a part. A bit of a part, too, not in the way that her supporters stated, but it plays a bit of a part.
Is Ige mild-mannered, or is he just calculating and knowing that he has behavior in ways that would expose him? He might be ruthless, but the less you say and you stay out of the way, let others talk for you.
Right. You're smart enough to run against Abercrombie or allow himself to be used as a candidate against Abercrombie.
Right.
And that paid off. Mm-hmm. And it's paying off right now. You know, whether you like him or not, you have to give him credit. You have to give him credit. I think he's a lot more than people realize. And I think people have underestimated him. And I think that's a mistake. They did it against Abercrombie, and they did it against Hanabusa.
I think something consistent with what you're saying, but I think that Ige, the people behind him, borrowing from the PRP and those strategies and getting out there and their tactics, and they're getting out there and, okay, so you take, for example, the lava on the Big Island, right? Now, this coming on the cuffs of him having a fake nuclear missile launch.
Right.
And that should have been devastating. I mean, for me, that was it for me. I wanted nothing to do with it. Okay. But.
That's right. But he should have been toast after that.
But here's what really got me. And I said, I think Colleen is, I thought she was going to win. But then I thought, after this failure to act, and that is, she again let him take every critical aspect of this election an opportunity that was afforded to her. Her team just sat on the bench and watched it go by, and the wind sucked from her sails. And here's how: when you take the Big Island matter, right? We've already gone the most embarrassing nuclear missile launch that didn't happen, and that was it. Boom. So then he comes back and he says, then there was talk of finagling and, hey, what if I show my kindness and my quickness to respond to this nuclear thing called the eruption of the volcano and the people being impacted, right? We still don't know how many people were impacted. We still don't know clearly if they're getting relief or not. We don't to the best extent, right?
Yeah.
So she sat there and watched it. Now, she's a congresswoman, right? She could have come out and says, I'm appealing to Congress to have a bill for emergency. I mean, if nothing else, she could have done that, initiated that. Did you hear that? Did you see that? Did you, right?
So, I don't recall hearing it or seeing it, but I don't recall hearing and seeing everything in this race. But here's the thing.
But Kim... But Kim, Harry Kim, saw that, and then $600 million to come in and fix this thing and take care of it, and then have Harry Kim sitting there going, this guy is brilliant. Now, this is the same guy that couldn't remember his code to his Twitter account, but now he's being presented as brilliant. You see, so her team just watched every faux pas there was. She just...
Right. They dropped the ball. When a big opportunity. But here's the thing, Carol. She did the same thing when Puna on the Big Island, strangely enough, got impacted by, I think it was a storm, when she ran for Senate against Brian Schatz.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Schatz went there. He's handing out water. He took advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah.
This is when that region, they still didn't have the votes out yet. It was a close race. Still didn't have the votes out yet because of what was happening. And he and those votes ended up being the difference. And he won that race.
Yeah.
They dropped the ball then, and I think you have a point. They dropped the ball in this race. But the reality was, I felt he was going to win, despite the missile alarm, because Hanabusa was a perfect candidate as a foil for Ige. Again, you have to look at the contrast. You know, the sophisticated parts of politics are one thing. The unsophisticated are the other when you deal with the masses and the people. The reality is that Ige was this mild-mannered guy, in contrast to Hanabusa, who is a very sharp, critical, arrogant,
heavy-fisted, pound the table.
Right. Demanding personality. So when you contrast that, and you got to keep in mind we're in Hawaii, where people like the easygoing, you know, get along to go along, I know how to deal with you kind of personality, as opposed to the difficult, abrasive, sharp. That may be entertaining, but it's not considered appropriate for governor of Hawaii. And so it was no contest to me. It was no surprise that he won, because she is her own worst enemy. And she does it. She's so arrogant, she doesn't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's true. She said when she was interviewed that this was the end of her political career. I sure hope that's true, but I doubt it. Because she can't win the big offices. She can't win Senate, and she can't win governor. Because her kind of personality is just not.
And in the meantime, Maisie has nobody running against her. What does that tell you? And Maisie, I don't recall any barnstorming great success on her part other than their recent with going at Donald Trump. But, you know, that just means that Donald Trump, if he's at odds with her, she's at odds with him. Guess what? Hey, you know, Maisie, that rail that you got going running through your district, that rail going to fail, baby, because I ain't going to put no money in it. You know, I mean, if you're going to talk about the man, you better come swinging with some deterrent.
In other words, let me put it this way. You don't jump in a knife fight with a gunfight
with a knife.
Yeah, you don't show up at a gunfight without a knife, and you certainly don't show up at a knife fight with a book.
Yeah, but, you know, there are so many things here that went awry for Colleen Hanabusa, by the way.
Yeah.
And then Tulsi Gabbard. See, now, I don't think Tulsi got all those votes right, but there are a lot of people not, cozying up to Tulsi. Right?
The thing is, it's hard. Tulsi is tricky. Basically, she is pretending to be. She's not a real progressive, but she's playing by the progressive handbook. What she's doing is intriguing. I will admit that, and I make no bones about the fact I'm a critic of hers. I have been a critic from day one. I think the woman is, quite frankly, complete and utter phony. She's about as honest and as true as a $3 bill. But what she's done, and I have to admit it, is she's pretended to be progressive. Well, being utterly and totally regressive. She's what I would call faux-gressive. Basically, she's a Republican under another name.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she is. But she, I think, quite astutely got herself into the Bernie Sanders camp and played that side against the Democratic establishment to make her look like a maverick. Oh, I'm not playing by the Clinton-esque or the Clintonite establishment. I'm not playing by their rule. You know, if you look at her, she's unlike other members of Congress, local members of Congress. I mean, the Hawaii members of Congress. They don't go out of their way to generate buzz for themselves. I mean, there isn't a TV or cable TV, network TV camera she doesn't like. She's always in front of the cameras. In fact, she spends more time for cameras than working for her constituents. But that's essentially what she is. And the problem is that there's no real opposition to her. I mean, there's opposition to her. There are people who dislike her. I know that personally. But she fooled a lot of people. There are a lot of people who have drunk the Tulsi Kool-Aid.
Well, remember, her father was Republican, or is Republican, and gravitated over. Because I'm very cautious with him, and just in thinking about him, I have reservations about his honesty. Because you know he was committed 120% against gays and his views of the religious impact and all that and involvement in his sect or whatever you call it. And then all of a sudden someone just push a button in his back and he becomes a Democrat?
Like I said, what did I say? One party equals two parties.
Yeah.
Or two parties in
the hybridization of these
parties.
It's like
Taoism. It's like Taoism. It's the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
It's the right and, well, really not. It's liberal and conservative.
But I don't really believe that there is a party. The hybridization of it, what has happened, you got Republicans, you got the green weenies, you got the independents, and you got... they're going to win. The greenies are always going to, you know, they go and get somebody and put them up there, and then... The guy ain't got the ability to even come to your house and speak to you or see you on the street. They're off in space or something, you know. That's been my experience with them. So they're not floating anybody out front that really stands for anything.
And that's what I say. Like I said, you have a party that wins and you have parties that lose. And the parties that lose, it's in their best interest, like the Republicans. It's in their financial best interest to lose. And it's in the Democrats' best interest to win.
So I was going to go and read the elections. I used to have some information on this, but when people run and they either want to get that second office, get high office, and they fail, they go get a state job. But also they still can, I think, retain their campaign monies and call themselves friends of or exploratory, right?
Possibly.
I'm just curious, and I'm going to look around and asking these questions. If you have $1 million, for say, in your campaign coffers, you lose. Do you have to give it back? Do you have to give it to the party? Or can you then take it and become friends of Carol Cox, or friends of ex-politician, and then you then become Kanala Ng and every other politician come to me and say, hey, you got some money. Will you let me, you know, donate some of your money to my campaign? And then, what do I get in return? Well, you know, if you need this, I'll vote for you. Oh, okay, well, I'll become a lobbyist, and I'll give you the money. So I'm not really running for anything. You see? So there's all kinds.
Right.
speaking to your point about Republican, is Democratic or the Republican Party, if you look at some of these donations and campaign donations, you'll see Republicans giving monies to Democrats. You know, for example, Cedric Gates, I mean, they gave money to him. Kimberly Pine is a Republican, right? But there are others as well.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Yes.
So,
what do they say? Texaco used to have a slogan that said, you trust your car to the man with the star.
Mm-hmm.
You give your cash to the man with the stash.
Yeah. So there are some dynamics here in the state that when we look at in the evening news and say, okay, what's the election results? There really was no real election because, you know, and you're thinking, oh, no, we only half of the people voted that, and you still can't get it right. They're still late coming in.
Yeah, the whole printout stuff.
You know, it's like...
They're not even trying now.
Yeah, it's rigged.
It's like, we still got 70,000 votes out. And it's like, wait a minute, already third printout.
And probably, I mean, the third, fourth printout, and they're still going, well, you know, rural areas. Really? Then you need to go to full mail balloting, you know. Mm-hmm. Get it done. But see, the Democratic way of gerrymandering, because why wouldn't they make it a reality that mail voting,
right.
Voting because, by mail, and you don't have to complain about needing volunteers. We're short of 400 volunteers. Right up until the day of the election, they're going, well, we're short of 400 volunteers. Really? You're short of ethics, maybe, but I don't believe it's the volunteers.
They're always short of ethics.
Yeah, so you follow, and it's like...
There are more votes available than
And yet...
But I follow.
Yeah, you look at the evening news, and they'll tell you what the Republicans are doing to gerrymander. To keep blacks from voting, and to keep... Well, I can take you down the road here and show you how the state Democratic Party that's in... that, as you call them, the Republican Party... that they are benefiting from this gerrymandering, this, you know, space-age gerrymandering. Just don't put the votes out there. Just don't go out and encourage people to vote. You follow? Don't bother to take away their ID. And do you need an ID to vote in the state of Hawaii? Well, I've always been required to show one. But again,
what is this, the South?
No, here in Hawaii.
Oh,
but
I think you know what I meant. But.
Yeah, I know. I but anyway, so that's the this thing. It reveals itself, but nobody pays attention to it. I mean,
that's my point. Like just like I mentioned about the blank votes, just the same thing.
Yeah,
I've noticed this for years, not 1 year, 4 years. Last night was the first time I had seen any discussion of it.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the major media, what have you.
I think the solution to the woes and the voting here is to simply go by mail balloting, mail voting, be done with it.
Yeah.
If we can't deal with the lazy people that just don't want to, they can't much you can do with them, but at least you'll get the ballot in everybody's hand.
Seems reasonable, but something that's reasonable doesn't really
work out. Yeah, because there's a certain party that benefits that the cream of the crop that benefits. So we're not seeing.
I wonder what party that would be. I'll let people guess. I got to get going though.
Okay. Well, anyway.
It was nice talking to you.
Yeah. So tune in again at talk808.com, and we'll. It's a pretty good system we have here, and we're going to actually. I'll be broadcasting it out and advertising it more, and we were just working on getting how to facilitate other DJs on it now, and we got that done. So, watch out, world.
All right.
All righty. Okay. Take care, Al.
Yeah.
Aloha. All righty. Well, that was Al Lanier, and We're going to get out of here, and this is the Carol Cox Show on talk808.com. We'll see you next week, and we're actually going to start broadcasting in the afternoons, drive time. We're just trying to figure out the exact time, and we'll let you know. But tune in, and also you can catch everything in podcast at Carol or CarolCox.com or Talk808.com. Just go there and hit the button, listen live. You can listen live or go back and listen to the archives. Anyway, we'll talk to you later on, and we'll take up what we left next week. Aloha.